I'm going to give a little different sermon today. It's a lot of history. Some people don't care for history that much, and sometimes it's kind of hard to make it interesting. But just out of curiosity, how many people were baptized, who are sitting here, were baptized before the year Mr. Armstrong died? Had you been baptized before that year, before he died? And the reason I ask that is, with all the turmoil and everything else, and just the fact that we try to keep teaching God's word, you don't get around to everything. But I realized, I thought about it, I'll tell you, it's a booklet that was published by the church called The Church and Europe in History. All I read was in the first chapter. It's a booklet, or just a good-sized magazine, so to speak. It's not real thick, 8x11, so it has quite a bit of material in it. And I read the introduction or the first chapter of it. It's called The Church Struggles for Survival. And I thought, that's an interesting topic or an interesting statement. And I hadn't thought about it before. So I read it, and from there I got some information. And also I did some research. And I realized with our wonderful school system and their commitment to teaching people even fundamental basic historical facts, let alone anything about God or anything about the church, I'm sure that most people who were baptized after Mr. Armstrong died and over the years have not really thought about the history of the church in the first century with any completeness, so to speak. So I got into it and I started realizing I didn't recall an awful lot that was there, and I learned new things myself. And I just felt like for us, we should have an understanding of what the people that we stand on their shoulders at this time went through. And of course, that would take us to what we call the first era, Ephesian era, and understand what those people did and understood and how they lived or tried to live through the times they lived in. And when you start finding out about the times that those people lived through, you know, it kind of comes home. Those people really put it on the line. And so this is a summary, this is a historical outline for you about the true Church of God during this time. The first date that I use is A.D. 33. Christ ascended to the Father and the Feast of Pentecost at that time. Let's go to Acts 2. This outline I've got here just goes through the progression of events that were quite outstanding during that time. Acts 2, verse 41. Then those who gladly received his word were baptized, and that day about 3,000 souls were added to them. That's a pretty amazing statement just in itself. And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship, in the breaking of bread and in prayers. Then fear came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were done through the apostles. God's giving them quite a boost, giving them a shot to take off in this world that they're going to be involved in. Now all who believed were together and had things in common, and sold their possessions and goods and divided them among all as everyone had need. Let's go down to verse 46. So continuing daily with one accord in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, they ate food with gladness and simplicity of heart, praising God and having favor with the people, and the Lord added to the church daily those who were being saved. And then I'm going to read verse 1 of chapter 3. Now Peter and John went up together to the temple at the hour of prayer, the ninth hour. Now, it says Peter and John, and the reason I mention that or point that out is because the New Testament, the book of Acts, and the New Testament is essentially about Peter, John, and Paul. And so that's why I just wanted to point that out at this point. These people were at A.D. 33, shortly after Christ went to the Father. And during that time, between that and A.D. 64, and I point out A.D. 64 for a purpose in a second, They carried the gospel everywhere that they knew or could think that they could go and that God led them. Now, they were told, and I'm not going to go there, he said, to all the world, Christ did. But to them, you know, exactly what did to all the world mean in the sense of literally to all the world? Well, I don't want to take time to go into all that, but the point was that's what was said. And then it also says in the scriptures in chapter 2 of Acts, talks about the idea, those who come after you. So they were involved in tremendous things. Like I said, all kinds of miracles. They saw things that the people who were with them saw them. God used the apostles to heal, to bring all kinds of blessings to them, taking them out of prison. Just amazing things. And that's what Peter, Paul, and John, and of course the other apostles, and the reason I use them is because we can trace them down through the book of Acts if we wanted and see what we're talking about here and the amazing things that were done. It was not without persecution. Of course, Paul was, what, stoned 2 or 3 times, left for dead once. Peter ran into opposition, and John, of course, was the one that lived the longest and saw so many things done in that first era, in that first part of the church's activities. But you get to AD 64, and that's the story of Nero. That's the story of burning Rome down. Virtually, he burned Rome down. He was a complete insane individual, and he was worried about people actually figuring out who did it. At one point, they even speculated that he did it because he wanted to rebuild it. So he just burned it out. You know, how many people have ever seen a huge fire like that? Well, I guess the fires we've seen lately would even support that. How many people died in those things? Because this was in the slums, and you know, Rome was a horrible place at this time. You know, it was very wealthy, lived in beautiful areas surrounding. Just the slums were unbelievable. They just go through the streets and throw out bread to see if people can pick it up fast enough. You had to be quick to pick it up so that you won the competition to get it. So Nero, well, I'm going to mention a few things about the nature of Nero in a moment, but he had reason to fear the people that he did destroy their mansions and everything else. And then, of course, if they had gotten the mob involved, you know, he had a reason to fear. So he comes up, of course, with which most dictators come up with, and that is a scapegoat. And the scapegoat was Christians, or people who thought they were Christians. I mean, you know, just lump them all in one category, Christians. And when I talk about Christians, I'm saying about those whom Paul, when he addresses, is talking about we and us and so forth. True Christians, people who have dedicated their lives to following Christ. But there are other people who, at one stage or another, or one understanding or another, were involved here. He actually murdered, slaughtered. They have estimates, but the smallest one I found was 10,000 people. And as I said, he was insane. So he used some of their bodies for torches around his big dinner parties. He put skins on them and put them out there with wild dogs or lions in the Circus Maximus, I think is what it was called. And horrible persecution. 10,000. You know, the people who were there and were committed to God's truth stood fast. Not that they allowed themselves to be taken if they could avoid it, obviously. But when I say stood fast, they held fast to the truth. They held fast to helping their brethren. They stood strong. The apostles, all during this time, were working. Sometimes we know Paul and maybe possibly Peter and, you know, different apostles were in Rome or going through Rome at different times. And they did not back off from the commission they'd been given. It was pretty amazing to even realize that Christianity, true Christianity, grew sometimes by leaps and bounds during that time, during that roughly, 31 years, I guess it was, before Nero came to do this in AD 64. This is what they faced. And Revelation 2, verse 1, of course, is to the church of Ephesus. These people stood strong. Yes, there was. Some heresies would come in. We all know the one, Simon Magus. We've heard it, you know, talked about in the church. There were heresies, and there were some who were taken off because of heresies. But by and large, the church was standing strong and actually growing. And the people, as I say, you know, the individuals, not just Peter and John and Paul, but the individuals along with them and other apostles, actually traveled through these times, lived these times, and faced the threats that they did. Well, in AD 64, Nero went crazy and did this, and the persecutions really started to grow. The next date would be AD 68, but between 64 and 68, well, then even afterwards with other Roman emperors, it was terrible at times, not quite so terrible, but for a long time there were persecutions. And all during this time, of course, the church grew and was strong. So you come to AD 68. And the reason I'm pointing these things out to some extent is so you know some history about the first century church. But also, we can see some of the parallels as to the times we're in, the difficulties of the world around us, the insanity that we see among the, well, most times I would say people under 30, if you put it that way, insanity politically and what they're doing, attacking people in restaurants because they disagree with them. That is just a spirit that's getting a good, strong foothold. You're going to see more of that. It's going to come. I don't know if it's going to come quickly. We've got a strange man, let's face it, the president, that God seems to use to, in some ways, help the church. He's trying to protect the rights of religion. And he also is trying to change things economically and just put some sanity back into the society that we live in, which is hard to do. And of course, we in California, we get a great share of the insanity, and it just keeps rolling along. Think about it. And I don't want to make any big political statement. Think about it. We've got the greatest economy we've ever had in this country, as far as people having jobs and all the measurements. The people who were on food stamps have made the decision to get off. The people who didn't have jobs and gave up was a huge unemployment group that was never counted because they gave up looking. And so they're no longer counted as the unemployed. They've come back into the economy and are taking jobs. There are jobs for everyone. And there's other areas to talk about that he has improved the situation. If you want to look at from our point of view, historically and everything, he has made Jerusalem the capital, as far as the United States is concerned, the capital of Israel, which how many presidents promised to do that and never got to it? So there's a number of things like that that you say, the man is different, no question about that, but look what he has done. And a lot of it has benefited the nation, and maybe, I'm sure, some of the jobs and so forth are out there for God's people. But this insanity that is after him was in Rome, and Nero was the epitome of it. I got another story, but maybe I might use it later. But my point is that they were living through the craziness of their society. Rome was crumbling. Their society was falling apart even worse than ours is in the sense of people rioting, which we see that. But, you know, we all saw the border pictures, you know, of people trying to rush the border. And I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. These people on the other side of the border, the American border guards, got guns, they have pepper gas, whatever it is, you know, and you just charge at them thinking, I have a right to be in your country, you know. It's insanity. I'm not saying that these people who want to come to America, I can understand why they want to come to America. And I can understand why they'd sneak over the border somewhere where they could. But just to rush a wall or a fence and barbed wire, whatever, it's crazy. Well, that's what we're seeing. We're going to see more of it. That doesn't mean you don't go on and plan your life and put yourself in a position to live a better life every day of the week. Because God, if you're walking with God, is going to make sure that it happens. Sometimes you have to go through trials. Sometimes you feel like you take one step forward and two steps back. And that's just how life is, whether you're in the church or not. But God is there for you and for me to make sure we do. And that's what these people had to do. And they showed a great, solid commitment clear through this year of AD 64, and even with the persecutions, up to 68, AD 68. And through AD 68, I don't want to say it ended there, but in AD 68, Peter and Paul were martyred. These are simple dates. Just keep them in mind or put them in your notes, because I think it's worthwhile to have at least a structure of how to understand what these people went through and puts our times in perspective. Perspective in the sense we really are living quite well in this society at this time. But we see the insanity in our society. And we see the murders, the horrible murders. I don't know how many people were killed in Las Vegas and on. People committing terrorism, whatever. We know that's there, but still, we're living quite well. These people were struggling to go through it, but you know what? If they were striving, like we try to strive to live a decent life, God was blessing them unless they were in a position that ended up being martyred. And I don't know, and never try to guess why someone would die under those circumstances or die a young age at this time, because it's a very sad thing. But Peter and Paul were martyred in AD 68. Most of the original leaders, apostles at that time, as far as we know, again, because we only really know about Peter, Paul, and John after this time or during this time, most of them disappeared, I guess, off the scene. I guess is the best way to say it. But we don't know for sure. You know, some may have been active in different parts of the world because they did go to different parts of the world. So the original leaders of the church, generally, except for John that we know about, were martyred or were no longer involved, maybe just died of normal reasons, and we don't know that much about them, or we know very little about them. We have historical things that says, well, Andrew was, and I think they said Andrew went to India, some part of India, and different things like that, which I didn't take time to look into at all. There's no reason to. But as I say, in AD 68, Peter and Paul died. They were martyred. And these are the men who we know about that were taking the message of the kingdom of God to every corner of the world that they could get to. That was their part and their assignment. So put that in the mix of what I've been talking about. The martyrdom, the slaughter of people by Nero. And then who knows what was going on in different parts of the world that Christians were living in as far as dictators and horrible governments. But they remained very committed to God's truth. Let's just read a little bit here in Revelation 2. To the angel of the church of Ephesus write, and John died in Ephesus. That's what we understand from history, just so it kind of connects there. He died in Ephesus, an old man. These things says he who holds the seven stars in his right hand, who walks in the midst of the seven golden lampstands. Well, that's Jesus Christ, of course. I know your works, your labor, your patience. Your patience. Under those circumstances, at that time. What are we told? Your salvation is in your patience. I know your patience, and that you cannot bear those who are evil. And you have tested those who say they are apostles. Heresy, of course, coming in, trying to come into the church, that say they are apostles and are not, and have found them liars. So they've got a lot to commend here. Christ talks about them in a way that is commending them, showing that they have earned his praise and standing tall in the truth. Again, we're talking at this point, AD 68 is where I'm relating this to. Of course, it was written at a different time, and I'll get back to that. But that's what our ancestors, if you want to put it that way, were doing during these very difficult times. And Christ commends them. And you have persevered and have patience and have labored for my name's sake and have not become weary. In other words, they kept up doing the commission of preaching the gospel to wherever that means they went and to wherever they could. And they supported it with their tithes. They supported them, as Paul talks about people, who supported him at different times and many ways, even under the persecution, even under the martyrdom of Peter and Paul. They saw their fellow Christians martyred. They saw their leadership martyred. And they stood strong, and God commends them. Now, I'm going to go on a little bit at some point into the rest of the Ephesus church statement there. But first, I wanted to continue to come forward with my historical outline. AD 69. This is one of the things we have in the back of our mind, a type, I should say. The church was warned and fled Jerusalem to Pella. Thankfully, they did, because the Roman general Titus, AD 70, the Roman general Titus destroyed Jerusalem virtually and slaughtered 600,000 Jews. Now, at that time in history, the church was looked upon as just another sect of Jews. Up till, of course, you have Gentiles getting involved much more. But in the time when Christ was walking on the earth, and through most or a good part of Acts, first, probably I could make a generalization that is not wholly true, but for the first 15 chapters of Acts, the church was Jewish. And, of course, Acts was written before AD 68 or 69, where they had to flee. But 600,000 people in the area of the Middle East, right in the area of Jerusalem, I don't know where that encompasses, I assume outlining villages, things like that, but 600,000 people this man slaughtered. He went on to become, if I recall, the emperor. He was rewarded for slaughtering 600,000 people for no particular reason other than they wouldn't worship the emperor. And of course, caught up in that were the people who did not flee, the Christians who did not flee, or those who said they were Christian and did not flee, caught up in that 600,000. So there we're down to AD 70, which is, 35-something years after Christ ascended. 33, I didn't stop and figure it out. We're down to 70 AD, and these people had stood strong. They had really faced it. Now, what we do know after 70 AD is John's writings, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. I'll get to that in a little bit. But those people at 70 AD stood strong. And why did they stand strong? They were warned by Christ. I'll just take a couple of scriptures. I don't want to take a lot of time on that. But they were warned by Christ. Let's go to John 15. John 15 and verse 20, where Christ says, "Remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master." And of course, he's talking to the apostles. He's talking to Peter and John. "If they persecuted me, they will persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also." So they were warned, and they took it to heart, especially because Christ was talking directly to the apostles at that point. And it's important that we put these things in perspective because history can be lost. History is being rewritten all the time. You can look at the different presidential periods they were in office, and when they get out, they're rewriting history all over the place to make them look good. So history can be lost, and it's important to understand the context of this. Christ warned them. And these people went through these things, or I think it's fair to say it was a huge anguish for the Christians who were just had a job and working and tithing and seeing this happen to the people in Rome or knowing about it or hearing about it with Peter and Paul. They were going through these things. They were going through them with their brethren. They were contributing. Paul, at one point, they gave to a fund to take it to Jerusalem because he had gathered food It was a matter of having something to eat, you know, and still following God's way in the middle of this kind of world that they were living in. Now, after the death of Peter and Paul, things started to go downhill with the church. People became discouraged, and they started looking at the scriptures, and let's go there, Matthew 24. And they're saying, this has got to be it. Matthew 24, verse 7. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. Of course, they even saw those to some degree, one degree or another. All these things are the beginning of the sorrows. They said, well, yeah, we understand that, but look, it's been going on. We've been in the church for 30, 35 years, whatever, and look what's going on. Surely we're getting where it's going to be the end of it. Verse 9, then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. You know, think about the thing of Simon Magus. He had this movement going. People hated the true members of the church because they'd been bamboozled into this guy, leading him down a path. Or someone was his follower. They ran up against those things. That's what their life was about. Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. Well, they've seen it. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. I'm out of here. I'm not putting up with this. I'm going to go back into society and do what I have to do to survive physically and to eat and not be martyred. And if they come and ask me about you, I'll tell them about you. That's what they were living with. It's a tough thing to realize, but that's what they were having to live through. Verse 13, but he who endures to the end shall be saved, and the gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come. Well, you know, they're looking around. This is it. Surely, Peter, Paul, John, all the apostles we know about, they were out there for 30 years preaching the gospel. And then all these things are happening, and we're being betrayed and martyred. We've got to be right there. We've got to be right there. Now, verse 14, as we know, to know the exactness or the specifics of that, we don't. What does that really mean totally? We don't know, as far as preaching all the world. Have we seen it? Have we seen it partially? We don't know. We're still living. We're still living in this world. We're still living at this time. But Christ did warn, and for a while, they stood strong. They knew the scriptures. They knew the Old Testament scriptures, too. They've been taught them by their ministers. Let's go to Daniel. Daniel 2. Daniel 2, verse 35. Then the iron, the clay, and the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floor. And the wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. Now, they understood that that fourth empire that was going to rule the world and put down all other prior, like the Greek empires and the Egyptian empires, they understood that fourth empire, the one that had the feet of iron and clay, they knew it was Rome. And every commentary you want to read on the Bible in this day and age, the Protestants have caught up to Mr. Armstrong, and they understand it too now. Well, where's Christ? Where is Christ on this? We see all these things happening. We see this Rome crumbling. And of course, Rome continued to exist for another, I don't know exactly, a couple hundred years. But it was usually ruled by people outside their borders, people who weren't Romans, who had no connection to the Roman culture. According to the Romans, they were the pagans on their borders. And Rome was, if you read about Caesar and different things, you'll see he actually was called back to Rome at some point, and I don't recall the dates, but at some point, because the mob had burned all of Rome, and this wasn't Nero. They just rioted and burned. All of Rome were cut up in sections where drug dealers and people who controlled the economy ruled these sections. And they got into it with the government of Rome at one time. They had to call Caesar to come back and put it down. They burned the capital. That's what went on in Rome all these years, especially after the time of Christ. And that's what God's people were seeing, because that's in their time frame. And they're seeing this, and they're saying, hey, the world's crumbling. Rome's crumbling. All this is going on. And they're saying, after a while, they start saying, but where's Christ? He didn't return. We're getting old. He hasn't returned. Well, there is an answer to that, of course, and that is, if you stop and think about it, and I'm going to take a moment to discuss it, it's the book of Revelation. John wrote the book of Revelation so that the church, well, let me go there first. Let's go to Revelation 1. The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show his servants things which must shortly take place. And he sent and signified it by his angel to his servant John, who bore witness to the word of God and to the testimony of Jesus Christ to all things that he saw. Of course, he saw the vision. And the book of Revelation comes out of that. The book of Revelation, because it does have the eras, chapters, chapter 2, chapter 3, it does have the era chapters. That's history in advance. That's history written in advance. That's us that it writes about in the last couple eras. That's the answer to this. Where was Christ? Hey, guys, it's a much bigger process. It's a much bigger world. It's a much bigger plan than you have ever envisioned. And of course, that's what talks about the Feast of Tabernacles, you know, that's all tied in, showing just the hugeness of the plan of God and what had to come about to make it possible. So it appeared that man's, to them, it appeared that man's world was collapsing. Just quickly, the term end of the world is a wrong term, end of the age, end of man's age. I think most of us understand that. In other words, God never says that the world will end, meaning mankind and what is on this earth. But he does say the end of man's age is coming. That's the end of man's age. It's going to be brought about, if I could say this, the weather vane is things when you see the spirit that you're seeing in the country of the United States and across the world. They want a world that can't stand because Satan's way will destroy all mankind. And that's what we're seeing when we're talking about, these sound like political issues, but they're so obvious. You know, no borders, whatever you want to do in your life, whatever bizarre, sick thing you come up with, like homosexual marriage, all these things, it causes society to collapse. Just like that town up there, Paradise, people that were talking about Paradise, that they didn't like living there because of the marijuana and the drugs that once the authorities made the decision to let it in, it just flooded in. Well, if you go in the foothills up and down the state of California, you'll find the drug havens. Maybe not the big-time drug pushers, but the drug havens. We used to say, when we drove up to our cabin, we had a cabin up in Kings Canyon, and it was at 6,000 feet. But between the valley and 6,000 feet were the foothills. And in the foothills, you'll find tons of people who are there either hiding from the government, or hiding from the law enforcement, or just there so they can smoke their dope, whatever they want to do. And it's a fact. I mean, we saw it all the time when we drive through those areas. It's a sad thing. What happened to Paradise? It got flooded with people who wanted to be there and imbibe in the drug culture. And they were allowed because the government said so. And so you say, well, you know, people can do what they want to do. Their statement is, you know, you ought to have the freedom to do what you want to do. If you want to smoke dope, you can smoke dope. If you want to take drugs, whatever. As long as you're not hurting someone else, what happened to the real estate values of paradise? And this lady said, that it was giving us this email or thing on the internet, we can't sell our house. Why? Because the value has gone down so bad that we can't get our money out of it. So it's not just, you know, morals. It affects a society in every way. These people want unfettered liberty. But you know what? You can't have liberty without law. Law protects me from you. Law protects you from me. Law says I have to treat you in a certain way. That's what law is about. God's law or man's law. It doesn't matter. You cannot have liberty without law. Well, they were living, our people, our ancestors, were living in a time when a good amount of the world that they understood and knew about was trying to strive for this liberty without law. And they were being the brunt of it because they were being persecuted. And Paul said, I'm not going to go to that scripture, Paul said, all will be persecuted who try to live God's way. Well, we have been in a society where we haven't seen it that much. When I first started working in the law office in Pasadena, I was sent to Fresno to represent a man, Stan O'Neill, and became a friend of mine. We had a basketball team for our church, and he was on it. Very fine guy, a good athlete. Stan was a really fine man, but he died. But before that, he was in front of a federal judge for refusing to go into the military. He said, my church teaches I'm not supposed to do that, I'm not supposed to kill, etc., etc. Well, they took him and I went up there for the trial. And the judge was a Jew from Portland, Oregon. His name is Solomon. I remember that so clearly. And the first time I'd ever been in a federal court, you know. How do you defend the guy? He's just saying he's going to follow God's truth. He's not going to learn to kill. Well, I'm sitting there, and the draft board has to send a representative and say, this guy refuses. And he's on the stand, and the judge says, well, is the man in this courtroom that refused to serve? And the board guy says, yes, he is. Can you point him out, please? So he pointed me out. Well, scrambling around, you know. So anyway, that was persecution, believe me, because I went through it too before I came into the church, or as I was coming into the church. I know a lot of, well, not a lot of you, because there's not that many of you left, but some of you did too. And what I'm saying is always been persecution on God's truth, the church. At that time, I defended people who were fired because they wouldn't work on the Sabbath. I was in the office down in Pasadena. I actually ended up representing a guy in Visalia who was a postal worker, which the law was so clear, it was so easy to win. I went up there, they'd fired him because he wouldn't work on the Sabbath. And so they paid my attorney's fees and paid him and everything. It worked out great. What I'm saying is there's persecution, always has been on the church. You know, for the last 20 years, I can't say that the church has been persecuted that much. Mr. Armstrong used to wonder. He, of course, was persecuted by people who had been in the church at one time, and they filed this lawsuit. I saw the transcript of that lawsuit. It was an amazing thing. And I saw the testimony. But that's another story. What I'm saying is the church was under tremendous persecution at that time. About 1,000 of God's people, we went down with our son. About 1,000 of God's people went and sat in the administrative building in Pasadena to protect it against the receiver that was going to take over the church. They made a call out, headquarters made a call out, and we were in Fresno, we were close, so we went down, and we spent the night in the administration building, and certain times singing hymns. And when we were able to go outside, my son was outside rolling up and down the beautiful hills, little knolls of Pasadena's campus. But at times, the church had been persecuted. And my secretary, who was in the church at the time, said, as I was leaving that day, you know, you could lose your license over this. I said, no, I don't think so, but there's always been that kind of threat to God's people. Now, again, there were thousands of us, so I'm not a hero. I don't mean it that way anyway. But God's people are persecuted. And I have no idea if there's going to be further persecution of this era, if I can put it that way, if we stand strong, because many times they weren't persecuted if they were standing strong. Now, the Laodicean era or people of the Laodicean attitude, let's not be there. That's all I can say. And I'm not pointing fingers at anybody, because we can all be in the attitude of Laodicean, whether we're part of this group or that group or anything else. But we do know, well, let's go there, chapter 12 of Revelation. And these people lived this before John wrote Revelation. So they hadn't seen this part about Satan being cast out. And I'll go to verse 5. And she bore a male child, that's Christ, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. Of course, it's obvious. And her child was caught up to God and his throne. Christ was crucified and Christ was brought up to God's throne. The woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God that they should feed her there 1,260 days. That's the promise to those who stand strong. That doesn't mean that everyone who stands strong is going to go there. Some people will be used by God and Christ to make the statement that they need to make to be a witness for God in the right circumstance. I've always thought of it this way. What if you say, we're ready to go, God's taken us to a place of safety, and you say, I was given a dream last night or whatever, that I was to stay here in, why, I don't know, Fresno, and lead a Bible study for 100 people or something. I'm just making this up as I go. So everybody takes off. I'm sitting there saying, yeah, but I was supposed to go too. Well, Christ says, through one way or another, you're here to do a job, and you do a job. Maybe you get to go when your job's done. And it's worthwhile for the people who are there, who are Laodicean, and hopefully we're not one of them, but who are Laodicean, that they know now they were given strength by me having a Bible study in Fresno for 100 people, or maybe, you know, up and down around the nation, around the state, that could happen. I'm not saying that everybody gets to go just because they're standing strong. I mean, just saying there are martyrs and God does use our lives. I'm just saying that that is there, though, to strengthen our minds so that we would know that God has prepared a place for the church in general who stands strong. The people who were in the Ephesian era before AD 96, before John wrote Revelation, they hadn't seen that. But the answer was there, and John gave them the answer. They'd been given warnings and instructions by Christ about standing strong, not being confused by false ministers, not denying Christ if you're put on the line. So they did in many ways, but there are those who crumbled. And I might say, as a physical human being, I can understand that. And hopefully that would not mean they lost eternal life. Okay, so let's go to Revelation. The book of Revelation was written by John, as I read to you earlier. It was written in such a manner. Let's go to Revelation. Let's go back again to Revelation 2. And I will pick up in Revelation 2, verse 3, because you've heard what I read before, and this is kind of repeating it. And you have persevered and have patience and have labored for my name's sake and have not become weary. That's the history in advance that was written by John about the Ephesians. Nevertheless, I have this against you, that you have left your first love. That's one of the things I wanted to come to, the first love. If we want to have an attitude that Christ is looking for, it's the first love. That we oldsters or youngsters, but oldsters, I would say, may be more vulnerable to it, losing your first love, not being excited about what God says. And he says, I have that against you, Ephesians. Maybe that answers, and again, I'm not pointing fingers at them, maybe that answers, that shortcoming may answer why some of them were martyred, why some of them had to go through what they went through, while others didn't. Remember, therefore, from where you have fallen, repent and do the first works, or else I will come to you quickly and remove your lampstand from its place unless you repent. Meaning, that era of the church would die out sooner or later. And it did die out after John. And there are men who appeared to be possibly apostles of Christ after John, and some of them were burned at the stake. But the point is, these people had great recommendations, and we're standing on their shoulders. He points out things about them: perseverance, patience, keeping the name of God, the works of God. That's what we can learn from the Ephesians, who went through those terribly, terribly difficult times. The upheavals, the slaughters, the madmen who ruled Rome. Nero was not the only one. He was kind of the one we pick out first because he burned Rome. But there are a number of them. There's some great historical novels to read about some of these guys and what people were going through because of them. They did all kinds of sick things, all kinds. The Circus Maximus was a very popular thing. And that's what these people went through and saw. But Christ recommends them. He said, but this you have, there's another thing he says here that he recommends them. But this you have, that you hate the deeds of the Nicolaitans, which also I hate. He that has an ear, listen. Well, that's what it says after every era. And from this era, the first 100 years of the church, we can see the recommendations that these people had, even though they went through what they went through. Because at that point, they went through these things, and some of them crumbled because it seemed like Christ had to return at that time. Well, I haven't got time to go there, but it's clear that men say, but things are always the same. It's always been this way. There's always been wars. That's right. But man's never been able to destroy all of mankind. Man has never made it the policy of a huge nation to live in the most sick, ugly way you can think of. It's never been that way. That's why we know we're living in an end time. We're living in the end time. Is it 5 years away, 2 years away, 20 years away? I don't know. I hope it's not 20 years away. That puts me way too old. And I want to see it. I want to be here to go through it with my family and help them and to help anybody I can. And to see my brethren go through it and make it. Go to the place of safety and see all these things and not be deceived by the false, as I have used the term, the Christ cult. People who love to just mindlessly use his name. But the book of Revelation, which God has given us, explains all that. And it says it was a much bigger program than what they had anticipated in Pentecost after Christ's resurrection and Christ ascending to heaven. It was a much bigger program. And they, because of time, because of persecution, because of confusion, because of heresy, by the time they got to 70 AD, they'd gone through some really rough times, and all those things wore down a lot of people, and they had lost their first love, as it says here in chapter 2 to the Ephesian era. They'd lost their first love. That explains, in my mind, why they went through a lot of the things personally that they did, because they lost their first love, and as we know, Christ was trying to get them back to their first love so they could, if there is time, that they could be protected. So they could be ready to go into the kingdom at the resurrection. And that's what he was doing. But they lost their first love, Christ said. They had some things to recommend them. They surely did. And we can look at them in that way. Okay, I do have some more. One thing I want to repeat, though, and I don't have time to go into it today, is there have always been wars. There have always been social movements. There have always been the troubles in society. Many times during the Black Plague, they were absolutely convinced that all mankind was going to be wiped out. Well, they were only Europeans, virtually. It was only in Europe and around the Mediterranean to some degree. But to them, that was the end time. But see, it can never be an end time. Well, let's go to Matthew 24. I should have at least read this part of it. I think, let's see, wait, hold on here. Matthew 24, it does show that there's an end time. Here we go. Verse 22. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh And we're at that time. You know, for your young people, go back and take a little time and just watch the film clips or the movies that show the atomic bomb. That is old tech. It's so far behind what we've got now, it doesn't measure at all. But mankind can destroy all mankind. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Those days will be shortened. That's a promise from Christ. You put it together with what John wrote in Revelation, and you understand that that was a much bigger program than they understood back in the first 100 years of the church, and see why they collapsed, many of them. That their patience ended. They couldn't handle it anymore, some of them. They went into heresy. They start persecuting their brothers who didn't. But there are those who held fast. Christ told them, get back to your first love and you won't be in that group. But the point is, mankind has come to the point, and there's nobody who disagrees about this, whether they're secular or don't know anything about religion or they're religionists. We're in a time when never before has mankind got the ability to destroy all mankind. Again, there's a booklet that the church printed that quotes President Eisenhower and some other generals. These are men who saw war. They saw the worst of it. And they knew that mankind had come to the point because of the bomb. And then, of course, how it's become amazing, how powerful it is. They knew mankind had brought themselves to the brink of extinction. We know it's not going to happen because Christ said it's not going to happen. And Christ has been doing a work. All mankind, to a great degree, has been warned what's going to happen between now and the time Christ returns. I don't know. We've all talked about the two witnesses, and that's another that's another story, I guess, another sermon. The point is, man is there. The diseases that come out of Africa and China could destroy man if it got rolling. You know, whenever you say Ebola, you see people's eyes roll and they marshal trucks and ships and everything else to go to where it's at to try to stop it because they know what it can do. And that's just a disease. You think we don't have military dictators named Putin and the people down in South America that, you know, could cause a nuclear war that could wipe out mankind? We do. We have them. We have a president. Like I say, he's a different kind of man. Anything but an ordinary man, which we should support with prayers that he can keep the country safe as long as possible, who pushes the envelope. And I'm not predicting this at all, but he might push the envelope too far with Putin or with the Arabs or whoever. I don't know. I'm not predicting anything. I'm just saying we're living in that time. As no other time, where all flesh will cease to exist if Christ doesn't intervene. We've got some amazing things that are going to happen over the next few years, and we need to keep our first love alive. It's not easy in a world that we live in, with all the pressures of trying to support families, live our lives decently and right, find some form of entertainment somewhere that doesn't turn your stomach. It's not easy, but we're living at that time, and we need to keep that first love alive and make sure that we realize with the heresies that Mr. LeBlanc has mentioned, and I've mentioned it once or twice, and I've done a little research on it, the heresies that are filtering out here and there sound kind of harmless. You know, with those heresies filtering out, we're going to make sure that no man with their heresies take our crown.